headquarters of Ramsey Solutions, broadcasting from the Pods Moving and Storage Studios. It's the Ramsey Show, where we help people build wealth, do work that they love, and create actual amazing relationships. George Camel, Ramsey Personality, is my co-host today as we answer your questions about your life and your money. It is a free call, and some say the advice is worth exactly what you pay for it. The phone number, 888-825-5225. Steven starts this hour in New York. Hi, Steven. Welcome to the Ramsey Show.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Our pleasure. How can we help?
So pretty much, I am coming into a large inheritance. And I want to know more sense of guidance and strategy on this particular subject, because I want to maximize this amount of money. You know, I'm very familiar with the philosophy you guys have, and I agree with a lot of it. It just seems like I want to be able to turn this into generational wealth and sustainability for my family. So I was just trying to get your opinion on that.
Wow. How much are you getting as an inheritance?
It seems to be upward of $700,000, around there.
Wow. Who passed?
It's going to be my wife's grandfather.
Mm. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Well, and how old are you?
I'm 32.
You're 30?
32, yeah.
32, okay.
What's your net worth?
Roughly, I would say around $300,000.
Okay. So safe to say you haven't managed a large sum of money in your lifetime.
No, nothing of this magnitude. I've, pretty much achieved everything on my own. Mm-hmm. But something like this, I want to be able to scale and, you know, take my life to a different level, I suppose.
Yeah, great, great question, and it's good that you're feeling the weight of the responsibility of this, rather than woohoo, I hit the lotto. Because right after people say stuff like that's when they do stupid butt stuff. And so, if you'll feel the weight of this, and here's what I want you to feel. I want you to feel the weight enough to manage it and do and be very careful with it. But I don't want you to feel the weight to feel the pressure to dive into something you know nothing about. That's the other thing.
I agree with that.
So if you feel like, oh, I got to do something with this, I'm going to put it all in crypto. You know, then we would call you stupid, and we'd look up stupid in the dictionary. There'd be your face, right? And so we don't want to do that, right? So that's not the point. So the idea being here that what wealthy people do is over time, they build relationships with people they can trust in different areas. I call them my board of directors, although they're not a board of directors, okay? So you want an independent insurance agent that has the heart. Okay. All of these need to have the heart of a teacher. Okay?
Okay.
You need a tax accountant, maybe a tax attorney. You need a real estate agent.
Okay.
You need an investment broker. SmartVestor Pro would be a good one. Real estate agent, an ELP would be a good one. Okay?
Okay.
You don't need them because you're necessarily going to invest today, or you're going to buy real estate today, or you're going to go buy insurance today. You're putting people in your corner that have expertise in money areas that you don't have to advise you and teach you. So they're the guys you call. So like when I die, because it's predetermined that I'm going to die first, Sharon is going to call the broker that is our SmartVestor Pro. Okay? And we have a long, we have a 20-year personal relationship with him and his wife. Sharon trusts him, and that's part of our board of directors. Okay. Jeff Zander at Zander Insurance handles all of my personal insurance and my business insurance. So any insurance questions, Sharon will be on the phone to Jeff, and I'm on the phone to him if I've got a question. You follow me? So we're put a board of directors in your corner. That's helpful, number one. Number two is don't invest in anything you can't tell me how it works, and don't invest in something because you're excited. If your pulse if your pulse rate's up, you're getting conned.
It should be boring.
No, I'm trying to, I do invest in myself, nothing to this magnitude, and I'm trying to break into real estate investing and things like that. It's more a sense of I have a lot of options, and I'm trying to figure out which is the path that's going to be.
Yeah,
you know, obviously, you can't
slow
predict the future.
Is the path. Slow.
Well, you see, Dave, the inheritance is already in equities. Now, I could easily leave it there, put my feet up, and say, hey, that's it. I'm just going
to
let it grow.
I could roll it over to mutual funds and not think about it again, and you'd be just fine.
Exactly, but I want to be able to take this. Like, Dave, this is the difference. Like, if somebody gave you this money, you'd be able to flip that into, you know, double it, triple it, because you're very well-versed
in how to manage money. I would double it or triple it over 7 to 10 years. I wouldn't double it or triple it over 20 minutes.
No, not 20 minutes. Not 20 minutes.
Not even one year.
Time.
Not even 1 year.
But, no, 10
Slow
years' time.
Down.
Just something that's... No, it's not about being impatient. It's just about being optimal. I could easily leave it, but I would like to maybe use it for, you know, possibly real estate.
I'd like to
buy my own real estate first on my own.
Yeah. Do you have any debt?
I have my home and a few student loans.
What do you owe on your student loans?
$25K.
What do you owe on your home?
I owe about $438, but it's worth about $700 now, so I got some equity in that.
Phenomenal. Okay. Yeah, that part where you said you do almost everything we teach is now kind of come out, because now I'm going to tell you to take your $700, and I'm going to pay off your house, and I'm going to pay off your student loans, and I'm going to put the rest of it into some mutual funds for a year, maybe two. And then I'm going to think about real estate as that has grown only then. But, Stephen, it's all over you. I can smell it. You're not going to do that. You're not going to do that. You're hell-bent on getting turning this money into something and proving something. Please don't try to prove something with this money. Honor her grandfather's memory. He would not have done the things you're getting ready to do. Don't do them.
And, Stephen, I don't know if you've talked to your wife about any of this. I'm worried that she's going, well, Stephen said he's got a plan. You need to be on the same page with what you're going to do and be in full alignment, and you both need to understand this. And you asked about generational wealth. The best way to create generational wealth is start with you, and you stop being broke, and you have no debt. Then we can start to build something for the future.
If you just put $1 million away at 30, 300 that you've got, 700 there, and you put it in mutual funds and in real estate, and it averages 10%, every 7 years it will double. When you're 37, you'll have $2 million. When you're 44, you'll have $4 million. When you're 51, you'll have $8 million. When you're 59, calm down! You're going to have $16 million. Okay? If you don't screw this up and go follow some nothing down real estate bullcrap on TikTok, this is The Ramsey Show. If current times have shown us anything, it's that the least expected events can and will happen, and we have to deal with it. That's why everyone who has a family counting on them needs term life insurance. For over 25 years, the only insurance company I've recommended is Zander Insurance. Not only because they search all of the top term life plans to find you the best rates, but over the years, they have constantly changed and updated their systems to make the whole process simpler and easier to get the protection needed. You can now apply with a completely touchless experience, with everything being done either over the phone or the internet. They also have plans with super competitive rates that don't require an exam, allowing you to skip a step and get the coverage you need faster. Go to Zander.com or call 800-356-4282. Great rates and a simple process mean there's no excuse to not get this done, people. Well, I love tax season, said nobody ever. Questions about taxes, though, they're coming in, and we'll help you with those. Here's a question from one of our listeners. Dave, we normally have someone do our taxes, but our accountant retired. I think we have a simple return. Should we try to file ourselves with Ramsey Smart Tax? Well, you can use the Ramsey Smart Tax software. It's very easy to use. The more complicated your return, the more likely you would want to use a professional. I personally use a professional, but mine's the size of a freaking phone book when I get it done. So, you know, that's different, obviously. We recommend working with a tax pro if you've had a major life change, like you retired, got an inheritance, adopted a child. If you own a business and file long form on that, probably a pro. You're not confident. You're confident, though, or you want to save time and stress. These are reasons that you'd want to do this. But if you get into it and it's just like, ah, God, I hate this. Okay, there you go. That tells you right there, right? So I hate it anyway. I hate just signing the thing, much less preparing it. So that's the whole thing.
I see it like buying back your time and mental sanity when you work with a pro. Now, yeah. People have simple situations. They've got a W-2.
If you got a 1040 easy, you know, do a Ramsey Smart Tax. You can do that as fast as you can do a 1040 easy. Don't pay somebody $300 to do that. I mean, it's just filling
out.
You
can pay $20 on your
own.
But
I haven't had one of those in my life, so I've always been self-employed.
Nothing about Dave's life is easy,
I don't have an easy button anyway. But, yeah. No, I mean, I've always been self-employed or had some kind of weird income or something going on where I didn't trust my own level of tax knowledge to do it. So, either way, if you want a pro or you want to use the Ramsey Smart Tax software, just go to RamseySolutions.com/tax. Our question today comes from our brand new sponsor, Neighborly. We are so thrilled these guys are on board with us. It's brought to you by them. They're your hub for home services, stuff like Mr. Rooter, Mr. Electric. You'll see those at Neighborly. So if you need to make repairs or schedule routine maintenance or find local help for home improvement projects, Neighborly is your source for reliable home service providers in your area. Go to neighborly.com and start your search.
Today's question comes from Claudia in Mississippi. She's asking, under what scenario do you have to pay capital gains tax on real estate? Here's my situation. My grandfather quit claim deeded his house to me. The house is completely paid off. He paid $24,000 for it in 2013, and it's now evaluated at $190,000. I'm wanting to sell in hopes to buy a new property. I've lived with him since 2020, and I took ownership in 2021. Under this scenario, would I be liable for capital gains?
No. Because it's been in your name for more than 2 years. It's been your personal residence for more than 2 years. A single person can make a profit of up to a capital gain of up to $250,000. So that'd be $274,000 in your case, because his basis was $24,000. A profit of $250,000 with zero income tax on your personal residence. However, this was stupid. You almost stepped in it. You accidentally are okay. Not because you had a plan.
If the numbers were different, the house value was much higher, this could have been a different scenario.
Yeah. So never deed property to someone prior to your death like Grandpa did. Here's why. Let's pretend that she didn't accidentally fall under this personal residence exemption for $250,000, which saved her bacon, okay? So let's say that she didn't live in the property. That would do away with the personal residence bit. Get it? Okay. So now it's Grandpa lives there, but Grandpa wants to make sure granddaughter gets it, and he doesn't want to deal with wills and stuff because he knows how those lawyers are, right? And so he, you know, this is the kind of crap people do, okay? So then he deeds the property to her with a quitclaim deed, which is usually a one-page thing and costs $6 to $10 to register at the courthouse. It's very easy to do this stupid move. Now, here's what happens. When you give someone property or a capital asset, stock, if I give George money, if I give him a share of Home Depot stock, if I give him a piece of real estate, his basis when he gets ready to resell it is based on what I paid for it. And so in this case, Grandpa paid $24,000 for it, so her basis is $24,000. If she had not lived in the house for 2 years, it would be called investment property. 100% of everything over $24,000 would be taxable. Major mistake. $150,000 worth of taxable income created here. Instead, had he deeded it to her in his will, at his death it went to her, you get what's called a stepped-up basis. Her basis becomes the value at the time of his death. Apparently, he's still alive. But at the time of his death, let's say he passed in this situation, her basis would not be $24,000, it'd be $190,000. She turns around and sells it for $190,000, zero capital gains. So the fact that Duber deeds this thing before his death, grandpa, dadgum ya, sweet but dumb, okay, could have cost her taxes on $150,000 or more here. It didn't, because she happened to live in the property for 2 years. But so don't give people stuff. Let them experience, let market value at the time of their death be their new basis. It's a lot higher than what you paid for it, and control the ownership vehicle, not by an early deed, but with either a trust or a will or both.
When does it make sense to use a quitclaim deed? What scenarios?
Divorces. Even then, though, you can get into trouble, because most divorce attorneys make a huge legal error. Ooh, I'm calling you boys and girls out. Because here's the thing. Husband and wife get divorced. There's a $260,000 mortgage. Husband doesn't get to keep the house. Wife's going to get the house because the kids are living in the house. And divorce attorneys say, well, just part of the settlement is you're going to quit claim your half of ownership to her. And so he fills out a one-page quit claim as part of the divorce decree. Boom. There we go. But guess what? Husband still has a $260,000 mortgage.
That's messy.
In his name.
On a house he's not a part of.
5 years later, he gets remarried and wants to have a life and buy a house. Can't do it. Still got a $260,000 mortgage in his ex-wife's name. Doesn't own the property, but still got the mortgage. Dumb. You're getting a divorce and doing a quit claim deed? Force a refinance or force the sale of the house. One of the two. Either the wife, the ex, soon to be ex, or whoever's going to get the house refinances and gets the other person's name off the mortgage, or we sell the house and get the name off the mortgage, because you're going to get stuck. And divorce attorneys do this all the time because it's easy. It's easy, but it's wrong. Okay, same thing here. This is for a different reason, though. This is when would you use a quit claim deed? I just moved property from one LLC to another the other day. I used a quit claim deed to do that.
To switch the ownership.
Yeah. It's just I own both LLCs. So it's a non-issue, right? When else would you use a quit claim deed? See, a quit claim deed means here's real estate theory for you. You do not, a warranty deed is what usually transfers in most states a house, a piece of property. And that means if I'm transferring property to you, George, I am giving you a warranty on the title, that I have the title. I am the owner of the title, and I am willing to warranty that and transfer that to you. Then if I didn't own the property and I did that, then you would have recourse back on me, okay? But I could give you a quit claim deed to someone else's property, because all it says is I quit claiming whatever ownership I have. And if I have no ownership, I quit claiming it.
Wow.
And I gave you nothing when I quit claiming it. So I could give you a quit claim deed to James's house.
I'm in.
And it wouldn't do you any good.
James looks so scared.
I'm going to quit claiming all of my ownership, which is nothing.
Wow.
So if you don't have pure ownership and you quit claim deed something, it's of no value. And you can really get into all kinds of crap there. So sometimes you'll use it to do some title cleanup if there's something more nuanced than all of that. But
I've only ever heard it mostly in the context of divorces.
Divorce and estates. Grandpa doing a dumb thing like this, or estate planning attorneys doing a dumb thing without forcing a refinance. I mean, divorce attorneys not forcing a refinance, and then you get stung and you're stuck with a mortgage on a house you don't own anymore with a woman you aren't married to anymore. There's something about this sounds miserable to me. This is The Ramsey Show. Guys, it's no secret that the real estate market is weird right now. So go with a mortgage company you can trust to have your back. Churchill Mortgage. Churchill is Ramsey trusted because they're stable, reliable, and focused on you. At a time when a lot of companies are being bought out or going out of business, count on Churchill Mortgage to stick around. They've been doing things the right way for over 30 years, and they'll keep doing them the right way for 30 more. Get started at churchillmortgage.com.
This is a paid advertisement. NMLS ID 1591. NMLS consumeraccess.org. Equal housing lender. 1749 Mallory Lane, Suite 100. Brentwood, Tennessee 37027.
George Camel, Ramsey Personality, is my co-host today in the lobby of Ramsey Solutions, which, by the way, if you're coming through Nashville, you ought to stop by. It's free cookies, free coffee, and lots of nice folk hanging around watching George and I do the show through the glass. It's kind of like watching ugly paint dry.
But I can't think about it too long. It's definitely weird, yeah. But we love it.
We're doing it every day anyway, so you ought to come by and see us. And it's also where we have the debt-free stage, which is where Jeff and Becky are standing. Hey, guys, how are you?
Great, how are you?
Great.
Welcome, welcome. Where do y'all live?
Parker, Colorado.
All right. Well, that's Denver, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, welcome. Welcome to Nashville. And how much debt have you guys paid off?
We paid off $162,000.
Yee-hee! How long did this take?
About 33 months.
Good for you. And your range of income during that time?
The range of income was $135,000 to $175,000.
Cool. What do you guys do for a living?
I'm in software sales.
I'm a teacher's assistant in a special needs classroom.
Very good. Excellent, you guys. What kind of debt was your $162,000?
Well, you're looking at weird people, Dave. We paid off our house.
Yay! Woo! Officially weird. Love it. What's this house worth?
Just looked, and it's worth about $660,000.
Awesome. And how much in your retirement accounts?
We are right around $750,000.
So we're looking at Baby Steps Millionaires. Way to go, guys. Very proud of you. Paid off your house and hit Baby Step 7 and hit Baby Step Millionaire status all in the fell swoop. So what started? You come along, you're doing good. And 33 months ago, you go, we're going to do even better. We're going to pay off the house. Tell us the story. How'd you get started on this Ramsey stuff?
Well, it started a little bit further back than that. Maybe 5 years ago, I was talking with my brother. And our idea of what I needed to retire for hitting a number was vastly different than his. And he had about a goal of double of mine, so I started thinking about what we can do. And shortly after that, I got your book, Total Money Makeover, and read it and started to attempt to try and do a budget. And honestly, we kind of failed miserably for a little while. So I took it to Becky, and we kind of gave up for a while, but then we had our... finally we had a moment where we were in kind of a deep financial trouble. We had taken out a HELOC to redo our kitchen, but then ended up not using it. But we were completely cashless. We had no money, and all three of our cars needed tires at the same time. So we needed to get out of our financial hole and had our never moment at that time.
Never again.
Yep.
Yep.
So, Becky, he comes down and goes, we can't even get tires. And you said, what?
It was, we were tired of never having money. We were fighting about it all the time. And so it was just kind of time to do something else and change that. And I guess the rest, as they say, is history.
So you drug the Total Money Makeover book back off the shelf or what?
Yeah.
How did this work?
Yeah, we both read it again together and started working on it and did the budget again and started figuring things out together, and it was life-changing, marriage-changing. It was awesome.
Yeah. First 2 or 3 months are rocky, and then
yes.
It starts smoothing out.
Yeah.
Smoothing out. By the time you get here, you go, why didn't we do this 20 years ago?
Yes.
Yeah, you need to give each other a little grace because mm-hmm. It is challenging. And I found a lot of encouragement from listening to the podcast every day, so you guys gave us a lot of hope.
Wow.
Yep.
And this started as some brotherly competition. You went, oh, he's not going to beat me. I got to step it up.
Yeah, he put a vision out there that was very daunting but encouraging.
Mm, that's amazing. So paying off the house is a big, it's controversial in today's world because people are going, why wouldn't you tap into the equity? And you guys, you did the HELOC, you didn't use it. But what would you say to those people who go, why are you paying off your house? That doesn't make any sense.
We just always wanted to be debt-free. My dad brought me up to not believe in much debt, but we'd had a mortgage for about 18 years, and we'd made almost no progress on it. We'd moved twice. We'd sold our house for what we'd bought it for, and then we had another house that we'd been paying on for 8 years, and we really had not seen it go down very much, so we just attacked it and said, this is it. We're going to do it.
Yep.
Wow. Way to go, guys. So proud of you guys. Very, very cool. Excellent work. How's it feel to not have a payment in the world and be millionaires?
Amazing. It's just amazing. It's kind of hard to put it into words, I think.
Yeah. What do you tell people when they say, what's the key to getting your home paid off?
I would say there's two things. You have to do whatever it takes. So,
what was the wildest thing you did under the whatever it takes heading?
I'm in software sales making a pretty good salary, and I drove Uber for a year. She went back into the workforce after not working for 15 years to raise the kids. And we even had our oldest son get a job. So everybody was trying to do something to help the
Everyone's
the
got skin in the game.
Yeah. Yep. Way to go, guys. Way to go.
And then the other thing I was thinking about that we talked about too was the second part is you have to believe in yourself, but you have to partner with the Lord. And so believing in yourself gives you hope, but then praying and pondering with the Lord really brings his power into it. Yeah. And there was months that we should have never been able to make a payment that we were typically making, and something would happen, and then we would have the money, and it was just always there.
Yeah, you hit it hard. I mean, 33 months, $162,000. You were popping that thing.
Yeah.
You guys weren't playing.
Yeah, there were some frustrating moments every time I wanted to do something on the house or in the yard or whatever. Jeff would say, not until the house is paid off. And I was like, okay, I know.
That is what we said.
Yeah.
So did the kitchen ever get remodeled? That's the question.
Yeah.
And you just cash flowed that.
Yep.
Yep.
So what's the next big thing you do? We're paid off house millionaires. What do?
We're going to go to Belize.
There you go. There you go. Have you ever been before?
No.
It's incredible.
We're looking forward to it.
You'll love it. I don't know how God made water that blue.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. You're going to love it. That's so cool. Do you dive? Are you divers?
No.
Oh,
snorkel,
go get certified before you go.
We'd love to.
It's one of the best dive spots in the world. Way to go, you guys. Very cool. Excellent, excellent, excellent. All right. Very fun, you guys. We're proud of y'all. Well done. You're why we do this. Very cool. We got the Live and Give bundle for you. It includes the Total Money Makeover book for you to give away and mess with somebody else's life like your brother did with yours. And the Baby Steps Millionaires book, which basically highlights what you've been doing. And you'll read through it and go, then you can give that away and encourage somebody. And Financial Peace University, a membership to that. Again, use it or give it away. It's all for you to enjoy. Thank you for making a trip to Nashville.
Thank you for everything you all do to bring encouragement to people's lives. And we wanted to thank our kids for putting up with us for these last 3 years, for saying no to things and for allowing us to get this done, and all of our friends and family and people at church that have encouraged us along the way.
Yeah, you've had some good cheerleaders. And you know what? The kids got a gift out of this because they got to see mom and dad learn something new, change something late in the game, become new people, transformed, and then that gives them hope they can do whatever they want to do. You gave them a lot of power by them watching you. Well done.
Very well done.
Love it. Jeff and Becky, Denver, Colorado, $162,000 paid off in 33 months, making $135 to $175. House and everything, Baby Steps Millionaires. Count it down. Let's hear a debt-free scream.
3, 2, 1.
We're debt-free!
Yeah! More is caught than taught. I've always heard Rachel Cruz say that, and it is so true. Most people make bad decisions because they saw their parents make bad decisions. But this family right here, they're going to start doing things differently. Those kids saw their parents hustle and pay off debt.
For 3 years. I mean, mom went back to work, dad's driving Uber. The old man, old lady did what it took. That's what the kids remember, right? They did what it took to win. I love it. They're not that old, but still. I mean, that's the way the kids think about it, right?
Sure. So, but a lot of people do think, well, Dave, I should have done this in my 20s. It's too late for me now. I'm 40. I'm 50. I'm 60. It's not too late.
You really can't fix what's behind you. All you can fix what's in front of you. So today's your day.
Ready? And 33 months later, you could be debt-free.
Ready, set, go. Ready, set. Yeah, it's your turn. Ready, set. You, I'm talking to you. Go! George Camel, Ramsey Personality, is my co-host today. Hey, if you're a new listener, and we know there's a whole bunch of you that are new viewers and listeners on YouTube, TBN, podcasts, all our numbers are up this year. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. But that also means some of you are trying to catch up on this Ramsey speak, the code.
The lingo.
What's all this baby step stuff, George? What's all this debt snowball stuff, Dave? Hey, if you want to kind of get grafted in and learn this stuff, we'll help you. Just go to RamseySolutions.com, click on Get Started. It's completely free. We'll help you figure out where you are in your financial journey and tell you what we think your next steps would be. And you'll start to learn the lingo. You'll start to figure out why it is we tell people to do all this stuff. So that's the plan. RamseySolutions.com. Click Get Started. It's completely free. Amanda's in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, Amanda, welcome to the Ramsey Show. What's up?
Hi, Dave. I lead a class of 20 homeschoolers who are taking your high school personal finance class.
Yay! Awesome. Thank you.
Yes, 20 of them. And recently we learned that CDs are not wise investments. So today in class, I proposed to them a 5% CD for 6 months. And as a class, we wanted to know what your recommendation would be to make that investment.
I'm sorry. I thought we learned that CDs are not wise investments.
They aren't, right.
And so you proposed to them a CD.
So, well, that's what there's a...
And you want to know if I think they're wise investments.
That was a conversation we had on the table. Should at 5%, which is a high yield... Mm-hmm. For 6 months.
Mm-hmm. It's 5% annual yield, not 6 month yield, but yeah, it's not 10% a year. Mm-hmm. So,
right.
And the inflation rate's running 9.6 right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be going backward, right? In purchasing power. That's Good why point. We call them certificates of depreciation.
Good point.
So CDs might be okay to park some money for a short-term thing. A short-term thing, by definition, is not an investment. And so I wouldn't use it for an emergency fund. But let's say that I was saving money for a car or a house down payment or for a cruise or something I'm going to take in the fall. Okay? And I wanted to park mm-hmm. my money somewhere other than in a savings account. I could put my $10,000 in at 5% and let it sit till September.
Mm-hmm.
And that'd be okay. But here's the trick, Amanda. It still didn't do anything. 5% of $10,000 is $500. Half of that in 6 months is $250. So you made $250. Whoop-dee-doop-dee. In the scale of your life,
we were talking $50,000.
Why would you put $50,000 aside for 6 months?
That's what we were talking about in class.
What are you going to do with it after 6 months?
It was just an opportunity to make a few thousand dollars in 6 months when savings accounts were 4%.
I wouldn't have $50,000 in a savings account, though.
Unless, but if you had other diversified investments.
I wouldn't have $50,000 in a savings account past my other than my emergency fund unless I was saving to purchase something. You see what I'm saying? There's no point in it. Why I want the money working harder than that if it's a long-term play. If it's a short-term play, it's not really it doesn't change your life.
It's just negligible at that point. So there's short-term savings and long-term
investing. If you have $50,000, $1,250 doesn't change your life much.
Right. So if you have real estate investments in place and you have portfolios established and you had an extra $50,000.
I would put it in those.
Put it in the mutual funds?
I'd put it in the real estate or mutual funds. It's what I do every day.
What if your real estate investments are paid off?
I would buy more real estate.
I'm sorry, say it again.
All of my real estate investments are paid off. I would buy more real estate.
So are mine.
Okay. Then buy some more. But I wouldn't put $50,000 at a poor investment just because I had some other investments that were good investments.
Good. That's what we wanted to know.
Okay. I'm so confused by this call.
And the other problem here is if you needed that money, let's say there was a great real estate opportunity, you had the cash for it, and it's tied up in the CD.
I think I was on her homeschool test, and I think I just flunked.
That was it. You're not passing.
I think I didn't answer the multiple choice.
As the kids say, you're not passing the vibe check. That's what they say now when they disagree with you. They don't like your attitude and your tone. They say you're not passing the vibe check.
Yeah. If we don't like what you're saying, then we automatically don't like your tone. That's how that works. Okay.
Yes.
Now, I don't know. I don't know what I was doing.
Well, here's the other problem.
What was I doing?
With CDs?
No, what was I doing in that conversation? I have no idea. I felt like I was chasing my tail.
I had a good time. I was entertained. if that's any consolation.
That's why we're here, George.
But the thing with CDs is, you know, my high-yield savings account, which is completely liquid, I'm getting 4.25 now. And so to say, hey, would you want to lock this up for the next 6 months or a year to make a little bit more and have some penalties on the interest if you take it out early? And what if the interest rates continue to go up? Well, you're locked in at that with that CD at that rate.
It's okay if you want to make 5% on some money that you're going to need 6 months from now. If you're going to lock it up at 5% and call that a long-term investment, that's dumb.
To say investing in CDs is
long-term investments have to outpace two things before you make what's called a real rate of return. A real rate of return is adjusted after taxes and inflation. Okay, if inflation's running 9.6, you have to make north of that. And inflation, by the way, is averaged over the last 75 years about 4.7. Okay, so lately has been high inflation. We all know that. Before that, it was a little bit lower, but the average is around 4 or 5%. Okay, and if you figure you're going to pay taxes on it another couple of points, another 2% or so, you've got to make north of 6% on your money, 7% on your money, to break even with taxes and inflation on a long-term investment. So you've got to be in something like mutual funds where you're 10 to 11% good real estate that's going to cash flow and give you an internal rate of return probably north of 15%, somewhere in there. But you've got to be in your long-term investments north of 5 or 6% or you don't even break even with inflation and taxes. Now, short-term investments, you're not really investing. You're saving. There's no such thing as short-term investment. There's savings, and there's investing. Investing, by definition, has some length to it. And so would I tell you to park money into a CD in any circumstances for 10 years at 5% and lose money after inflation and taxes? No, I would not. That's, you know, so. Yeah.
The only time I've heard you say put in a CD is when people get a big pile of money and they need patience and time and you go just park in a CD.
Someone passes away and your husband died and you got left $400,000, sit on it in a CD for 6 months, a year and cry and get your head cleared before you start making good decisions, before you start making decisions in the middle of grief or something like that. Just give yourself time for the brain webs to clear and that kind of stuff. But again, that's not a long-term strategy. That's a parking place for a short term. If I'm going to buy something with a $50,000 in the fall, it's a parking place. 5% is fine. But even then, you need to realize the difference in 5 and 1 is $1,250 and, what, $50 or $500? $50. Okay?
Is that on the 50
yeah,
grand?
Yeah. That's right. So it doesn't change your life. You know, it's like I got in all kinds of trouble with the last Biden bucks thing. Biden came out and gave everybody $1,300 or whatever it was. And I said, if $1,300 changes your life, you don't have much of a life.
Well, you're just snotty and you're a snob and you're just a rich guy. $1,300 is a lot of money. You shouldn't say stuff like that. The little people get mad at you.
Listen, you're going to keep being little people if $1,300 changes your dadgum life. You need to have a better life than that. Where $1,300 does it. If $1,300 fixes your life, you were really screwed, okay, before. So that's the thing. It's okay. $1,250 is good. Send it to me. I'll do something nice with it. But please, don't think that fixes anything. It doesn't.
It's not life-changing money.
It's not life-changing money. So, and when you run these things out nominally, meaning do the actual math and the actual dollars, it's a bit of a joke, usually. This is The Ramsey Show.
Hey, George Camel here. If you love the show and you want a deeper dive on your money journey, we've got a weekly newsletter that gives you helpful articles and tips on following the Ramsey way. Just go to RamseySolutions.com today to sign up for the newsletter. Again, that's RamseySolutions.com to sign up for our weekly newsletter.
Hey, it's James, producer of The Ramsey Show. This episode is over, but check the episode notes for links to products and services you heard about during this episode. Thanks for listening.